Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
In the playbook. For a Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook, PFW's Eric Scalavino here. In just a short while, we'll be joined by Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Enquirer, who will help us break down the Cincinnati Bengals lineup for Sunday's game at Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati. Hour number two, it will be Russell Baxter, Pro Football Guru. .com, as he normally joins us here on Prediction Thursday. And yes, when I say Prediction Thursday, that should give you your cue to let us know how you feel about this game. Webradio@patriots.com. The email address, the telephone number is toll free. Yet again, for those that don't understand, that means we pay for the call. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Anywhere you're listening to us, online, or, you know, wherever you may be on your mobile phone app, it doesn't matter. That's how you can reach us here on the program. The Ace Ticket Hotline locally is 508-298-0398. Twitter handle is @JRBroadcaster. So follow on Twitter, send in your predictions, your scores, whatever you have, your comments on individual shows. And then, of course, on Facebook, you can find me, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. Now, we do have news of the day to talk about. And you guys were talking about it before the prediction started. So I think it bears, you know, starting off at least with this before we jump into the Bengals and the fact that the Patriots did apparently bring somebody in new to practice today because everybody was wondering, who the hell is that number 10 guy out there on the field? Mm. Now, it is worth noting that the Patriots have not yet officially announced anything. And we anticipate that could happen at any point in time. But then again, the Patriots also haven't officially put Vince Wilfork on the IR either. So what do we make of Austin Colley?
I would rather they have signed Austin Rook.
I'm sure he would probably agree with you. Although I think Austin Colley might be able to catch the football a little bit better.
Well, maybe. But, boy, I really think this kid is doing himself a disservice trying to get back into football after all the concussions that he's suffered. He's one play away from really doing serious permanent damage to himself. And I know he's spoken in the past, recent past, about signing waivers for the concussion stuff. And my heart's going to be in my throat every time he goes out on the field. And we have too many players on this team now that I have to say that about.
Really?
Yeah. Too many players that I'm concerned every time I see them on the field. That
Who are the others?
Danny Amendola, Rob Gronkowski. You know, some pretty important guys.
You have sincere concern for these guys if they step out on the field again?
Hell yeah.
Because of the injuries?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Because of their history and because of the nature of their injuries? And yeah.
Colley is a guy
who falls in that category.
Yeah, I don't mean that from a personal standpoint. I mean that from clearly a football playing standpoint, and you may also from a personal standpoint because you clearly have to deal with these guys every day.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to see someone jeopardize their long-term health, their life, basically. You know, I mean,
what does this say then? Does this speak to the inability to let go when you should let go?
On the player's part, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And on the team's part, a desperation that you're willing to sign a guy like that who is so fragile. He is so on the edge of every time he goes out there, he is one, and it doesn't even have to be a huge hit. I mean, the last time I saw him suffer a concussion, it was basically like he got, you know, he sort of collapsed and had somebody fall on top of him. It wasn't even like a play that you think, oh, you know, like those old jacked up hits that they used to do on ESPN. It was a seemingly innocuous play, and he suffered a concussion and was out and was done. I mean, I don't understand this move. I really don't.
Well, then I think this bears a little examination, and I would also ask our listening audience to chime in with your 2 cents worth on Austin Colley's apparent signing by the Patriots as well to bolster the wide receiver core. Clearly. First of all, let's backtrack just a moment. He was in here during training camp last year?
I believe this summer.
Was it this summer?
I think it was this summer. Well, he was in for a workout.
He wasn't signed. You're thinking
of Anthony Gonzalez.
That's who I'm thinking
that
of.
That was the previous year.
He was in for a workout here.
Right. Anthony Gonzalez was here during the off-season strength and conditioning.
Right.
2012.
But Austin Colley, though, did come in for
a
workout.
Yes. Yeah, but has never signed.
Right. And so what do you think happened between now and then? Because that begs the question.
Well, the receivers started getting hurt. That's what happened.
All right. And that also then, begats the next question. Maybe because Kimbrel Tompkins showed up on the injury report this week with a shoulder.
And
we
Dobson
saw the hit
neck.
That Dobson took to his neck
and
against Atlanta.
And Slater
being out, which is another issue as well, that they, meaning the Patriot coaching staff, they feel like they need some insurance.
But, and that's fine. But how about a guy like Quentin Sims, who's young and healthy and was somewhat productive for you during training camp? He's not on anyone's roster as far as I know. Why are you going for a guy like this who his best days are long gone?
Are his best days long gone?
Yeah.
Somebody doesn't think so.
Well, either that or somebody is just desperate.
See, that's why, the whole, and we were making fun about, basically franticness in Foxborough news at 11 here a couple of minutes ago. But quite frankly, this does kind of speak to a little bit. I don't want to say desperation, but it does speak. This is I'm not surprised that they signed somebody for depth. I'm really not, considering what we saw last week and what the injury report had to say this week. But especially on the fact that, we believe, based on, again, the eye test here, that Danny Amendola is closer to coming back. We believe that Rob Gronkowski could also come back in the not-too-far-distant future, if not this week, then perhaps the next, even though I know he's in a different position. But the depth seems to be taking care of itself, and now you're going to go out and you're going to sign a guy for more depth at the slot receiver, I might add, which kind of begs another question entirely here, is, can Julian Edelman stand up to the pounding? Because here's a guy who's at the top of the NFL receiving list right now through the first 4 weeks in total number of receptions, and you're going to sign another slot guy, especially when Amendola's coming back?
And Edelman's another guy who's never played a full season. Let's not forget.
I'm not. That's why I'm making the statement that I am. Something else is going on here.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, John. But I didn't know who the receiver was at first when we were out there just because, he had a helmet on, and then when he took it off, he had his back to us. But I was stunned when I heard that that's who it was.
All right, well, so it is. It is who it is. Sven in Sweden says, do you think they bring in Colley to use him mostly as a run blocker? It's hard to imagine that anyone will click with Brady with only 1 week of practice.
You don't bring in wide receivers to run block.
I didn't think so either. I mean, he's played in similar offenses because of his, time, I guess, with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. But he was in camp this last year with San Francisco and was cut in August, and he's been out of football for the last 2 months before, obviously, being in practice today with the Patriots, wearing number 10.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is very curious and certainly makes you wonder why.
Yeah.
And number two begs, the further look at, the injury report a little bit later on this afternoon and who actually might be healthy enough to play against the Bengals on Sunday.
It's a long list today. Yesterday, 15 guys limited.
Yeah, I saw that.
And 3 DNPs.
Right. Well,
I mean, 2 essentially.
Right.
With Will Fork. We knew that wasn't going to be there.
So as long as we're on the subject, what was practice like today?
Same as yesterday. Those 3 guys, Will Fork, Slater and Ridley, who has a mysterious knee issue that has cropped up since the Atlanta
game.
Yeah,
any idea where that might have come from?
No, I didn't see anything in the game that led me to believe that he was...
Me either.
He was hurt.
I went back through it again yesterday as well, and I'm like, okay, unless it was just, a hit, somewhere in the pot.
Could have come up the next day or whatever, yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, that was
a bruise or something that just, you know, wasn't going away or wouldn't, you know.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, so I don't know. And obviously with Colley being there, doesn't have practice squad experience, so he's on the 53 out at practice today. That means somebody on here is not on the, you know, on the active roster anymore, whether it's Wilfork, we assume.
Yeah, that remove has not officially been made as we opened up with today. No, that has not been made yet.
No, and
and we assumed that it was going to be maybe an A.J. Francis or Marcus Forston or somebody.
And it still could be.
It could be, but with Colley's inclusion now, how does this change
right,
things?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's bizarre still that they haven't made any announcements. We're in the middle of the afternoon after two practices now this week, and still no announcement. Usually those kind of moves are announced on Wednesday to
see, start. This is why
Wednesday is the Monday of the NFL work week.
This is why it's bordering on ridiculous. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday. It's almost disingenuous, really. I mean, clearly the Patriots don't want to or have a problem with the way the rules are supposed to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my interpretation of this. Because why else, the guy has surgery, do you not put him on IR and explain yourself? Why else? There's no trade secret that you're keeping from anybody else. There is none. It's purely there's no strategy involved here. No. He isn't going to play. So why wouldn't you say what the deal is? It makes no sense. Zero. Other than the fact that there's a czar who's in charge and it's his way or the highway. And okay, if that's the case, that's fine. Then say that. They just say that. I know you're shaking your head like you're talking, you're preaching to the choir here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I am openly asking this question. And number one. Number two, yes, I am an employee of the New England Patriots, but the Patriots have given us free rein here in this particular venue, as we've said for over the last 13 years since we've been starting, you know, Patriots.com radio and doing these weekly shows for the last 13 seasons. Patriots have been gracious about letting us criticize when we feel like the criticism is warranted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those situations.
Yeah.
There's just no reason for buttoning your lip.
Yeah.
Because it could clear up a lot and the speculation would die and the rumor and innuendo would die. You know, PR 101 usually tells you to seize the moment, attack the situation, control the news. Patriots don't do that. They just let everything fly around them and they don't care. And I find that just a bass ackwards. Which is my way of saying ass backwards way of doing things.
Non sequitur, very quick. Breaking news, NFL wise, Josh Freeman is now a former Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He's been cut.
I can't say that that's a shock.
They've tried to trade him.
Nobody wants him.
At least not for trade value.
Right.
So he's on the street now.
I'm not shocked by that.
No.
I'm not shocked by that at all.
2 weeks ago,
he was your starting quarterback against
the Patriots. Now he's
out of work.
Yeah. I'm guessing probably not for
too long.
Too long.
Someone's going to pick him up. Someone's going to need some depth at quarterback.
Jacksonville?
Yeah, maybe. That could be one spot, sure.
Oakland?
Possibly. I mean, there are all kinds of possibilities. And frankly, if I were looking for a backup quarterback, he'd probably be the first guy I'd call. Probably. Because, I don't need him to win games for me. I need him to be there as insurance. Mm. You know, and so you got to plug somebody in, right? So... All right.
So anyway, that just came down the wire.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, good. Well, we like to do breaking news when it happens too. Do we have a breaking news sounder? I don't know. He's on the phone. He's on the phone. That's all right. We'll let Kevin do his job here. All right. So we've got Austin Colley to talk about. I'd be curious to know how Patriots fans feel about his inclusion, his apparent inclusion on the roster here. What's the move you'd make? In addition to your predictions, and again, through 4 weeks, we've had no one get an exact score predicted properly, exactly, so no awarding yet of the Patriots yearbook / media guide.
Wow.
But it is still up for grabs this week.
Someone come close last week?
1 point.
1 point off. Huh?
Someone picked Patriots 31-23, and the Patriots obviously won 30-23.
Wow.
So they missed by 1 point. But as I said earlier this week, close only counts in horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's just, you know, it's gotta be exact. For it to count, it's gotta be exact.
Yeah.
The attention this week, is now focused on squarely on the Cincinnati Bengals with everything that's kinda like, starting to, We're starting to stir up some dirt, basically, is what we're starting to stir up here with the Patriots roster and injuries and signings going on. And we do have to spend some time on
the
opponent.
Alleged signings.
Alleged signings, yeah, because, again, it hasn't been announced. And, again, neither has Vince Wilfork's, you know, we think, eventual arrival on injured reserve. That has not been announced yet either. And another story for another day, another fight to fight another day, perhaps. Mm. Joe Reedy covers the Cincinnati Bengals for the Inquirer in Cincinnati, and he joins us here in the playbook. Joe, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. Thanks for taking the time today.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're just kind of scratching our head trying to figure out how and why and what the reason might be behind adding a guy like Austin Colley to the roster today, because that's what the Patriots have done. Any clues in your own mind? I know you're not as close to it in Cincinnati, but what's the first reaction you had when you heard that?
Just seeing that Amendola practiced and everything, and with the cast of receivers that you have, adding a receiver to me kind of seems, I don't know, something totally out of the blue. And then I think when he had the concussion thing, too, it's kind of a head-scratching move there.
Yeah, a little bit of a head-scratching move, I think, would be the exact way to put it. All right, so then tell us why some of us are scratching our heads over the Bengals after a 2-2 start. Great at home, not so good on the road. They get to be at home against the Patriots here, however.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of been the opposite from the past 2 years, where they've been nearly a 500 team at home, and then on the road, last year they were 6-2, and they've already dropped their first two road games. I think turnovers is a common theme. They had three against Chicago, led to 14 Bears points, lost by three last week. Two turnovers at inopportune times really took them out of a lot of things. And then there was a 4th-and-1 where they were short running and they had the ball at the Cleveland 7. So a lot of self-inflicted mistakes right now that they haven't been able to recover from.
Yeah. I get the impression that there seems to be some blame, and again, correct me if we're wrong here, but looking at it from afar, that there seems to be some, if not blame, then a little bit of consternation on the part of fans and even some who cover in the media over the inability of Andy Dalton to really be a consistent presence at quarterback, to be maybe the kind of guy that can rise the team up to the next level. Is he guilty as charged there, or is this coaching staff, is this organization still willing to give him the chance to be that guy?
I think they're wanting to give him a chance, but there's also some inconsistency there. And with a quarterback in his third year, with all the starters back on offense, you add two key pieces in the draft, there's no reason it's disappointing and embarrassing that they didn't score a touchdown in Cleveland. But just call what it is, that you got to settle for two field goals when you're in the red zone. You can't convert there on a 4th-and-1. As inaccurate as Dalton was during the game, that A.J. Green has only 2+20 receptions in the past 3 games. This is an offense that isn't in sync right now. I think most of it you got to put on Andy, but some of it you got to put on the offensive coordinator, because I think there's a maybe a little bit of too quick of a hook not to commit to the run game or run it a little bit more. And it's one of those things right now where I think they got to discover what they do well and stick with it, because right now they're mastering a bunch of different they're doing a bunch of different things good, but they're not doing one thing well.
Is that part of the problem last week against Cleveland?
I think so. I think there was a inability to maybe stay consistent with the run, where I think they were looking for too many of the big games instead of trying to be consistent and hammer it. You look at the 4th quarter, they didn't have one rushing attempt yet at the beginning of the quarter. It was still a 3-point game, or where they were in range to contend. I think it was 10-6 at the time, where they could have broken through and gotten points, where if you stick to the run with Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Giovanni Bernard, I think Jay's done a nice job during some series of alternating them on plays, and that's helped out a bit. But I think the fact that they were looking for too many big plays and not just trying to patiently get it downfield was a big downfall.
Do you anticipate that the Bengals will try to take advantage of Vince Wilfork's absence by running the ball more, or trying to attack New England's secondary, even though Aqib Talib has been you know, playing lights out the last few weeks?
I think it'll be a mixture of both. I think they'll run it a lot more than what they have been. And I think Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis is due for a little bit of a breakout game. Really the only game to me where he's played well was the second half of that Pittsburgh game, where especially on a couple series, they were able to get consistent carries and able to hammer it out a little bit. And he's averaging less than 3 yards a carry, which, let's face it, is a concern, especially when you had a Giovanni Bernard, and he's averaging about 6-7 yards a touch right now. I think Benny's got to get it in gear a little bit. And their success has been running it up the middle and between the tackles. Both guards have done well run blocking. Kyle Cook's been a little inconsistent, but mostly solid. So definitely hammering up the middle. I can see them doing a lot more of that on Sunday.
Then let's also, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention A.J. Green, because clearly you've got one of the biggest, tallest, most athletic wideouts that happens to be in the NFL, and I guess Dalton has had a trouble, you know, connecting with him. So how best now, in your estimation, can the Bengals find a way to allow A.J. Green to do what he apparently could do best, and that's, you know, catch it and run with it, get in the open field, make something happen against, you know, defensive backs that are largely undersized against him?
Yeah, I think the one way is, and they did a good job of this in the Pittsburgh and Green Bay games, is the guys on the other side of the field, they start going to them a little bit, and that opened things up for A.J. When you look at last week, Marvin Jones targeted 3 times, no receptions. I think Mohamed Sanu targeted 4, a couple of catches, including drawing a pass interference penalty. And consistently going with the tight ends, too. I think Jermaine Gresham and Tyler Eifert last week, the three longest receptions. But really, it's a couple of the other receivers. And I also think if you run it a little bit more, that might open things up pretty deep. Because right now, with the lack of a threat of going deep or not going as deep to AJ a lot, you're basically... That's basically allowing the defense to tee off a little bit and not take the run seriously, which for a team that wants to achieve balance is not a good trend at the moment.
Are you looking forward to the anticipated A.J. Green, Aqib Talib matchup as we might be?
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's gonna be really a great matchup to watch. I think Aqib, the way he struggled a little bit in Tampa Bay, it's good to see him kind of get a second wind and have the comeback that he is. And I think AJ's got a lot to prove, too, because I think Khalid almost a similar type corner to Joe Hayden, and considering how Hayden held him in check, I think AJ's got a little bit to atone for, so it should be really fun to watch.
It does seem, as again, Joe Reedy, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer, joins us here in the playbook, does seem that Mike Zimmer's presence as a defensive coordinator has given a feeling of solidarity on that side. And we've seen that there are some pretty good athletes, especially in that front four, and I think that probably should consider the Patriots, should be a cause for concern for the Patriots' offensive front overall. How has Zimmer changed things for the better on that side of the football?
I think he's got them all playing together. I think technique and discipline is better than it was when the previous coordinator was here. I think in that 2010 game, that season opener, they were trying a lot of new and different things and got away a little bit from what they were, but they've kind of got back on track a little bit these last 2 years. I think in 2009 and 2010, it was the cornerbacks, Jonathan Joseph and Leon Hall, who were the cornerstones. It was a lot more back seven based. The past 2 years, it's been a lot more front four based with that athletic defensive line and everything. But Zim's going to have an interesting challenge this week. Michael Johnson hasn't practiced both days due to a concussion. Vontaze Burfict suffered a neck injury in the Cleveland game and hasn't practiced today. And with Leon Hall still out, they're pretty banged up at the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned Michael Johnson. I would think that that athleticism that exists on that front four, which we said would be a concern to the Patriots' offensive front and Tom Brady as well, that I don't want to say could give the Patriots an opportunity, but at the same time, because there's other guys there that can obviously do the job, but I thought that that was actually a considerable at least addition to the injury report this week. We also saw where you've fit in, I guess, Michael Boley as an addition to the roster at linebacker.
Yeah, they had him in for a workout 3 weeks ago and finally signed him on Wednesday. I think he gives a little bit more of a veteran presence to that linebacker room, which, I mean, still is pretty young. You got Vontaze Burfict in his second year. Ray Maluga's in his fifth, but I think still kind of trying to find his way a little bit. And really the guys behind the starters, there's just a tremendous lack of experience right now, which I think Boley playing the outside helps stabilize things a little bit.
And in the defensive backfield, I know where it's been a little bit problematic thus far. Saw where Pac-Man Jones was, I guess, taken away from punt return duty. So what? He could, contribute more in the defensive backfield?
Yeah, he started last week with Hall out. He's been playing a lot of snaps at cornerback, I think, in the Green Bay game. Out of the 81, 82 defensive snaps, he played all but one, and that was with an abdominal injury. So I think it's one of those where Darren Simmons has been gone. If he's out there a lot of snaps, I don't want to put him back there fielding punts, but I think Brandon Tate struggled a little bit and kind of mixed things up. I think Pac-Man will be out there a couple times because during his career, he already has one punt return against the Patriots. I think it was in 06.
Sure. Overall, is this team where you think it should be? Is it behind schedule? I mean, I'll be honest, I got caught up in some of the hype during, the summer, watching, HBO. By the way, I enjoyed it, and I thought a lot of these guys were certainly very forthright and honest and fresh. I mean, nobody
especially seemed to, James Harrison.
Well, Harrison, I thought Harrison was great, actually, and I've always kind of liked his character. I don't know if it's a real thing or just a shtick that he puts on some of the time, but frankly, I like personality in the NFL as a fan of the game. Are these guys what they purported to be, having the television cameras examine every inch of their training camp lives this summer?
Yeah, I think they are. It's certainly a lot different from 3-4 years ago and Chad and T.O. and everything. I think it's a quieter, more level locker room, for lack of a better term. I think it's more workmanlike. I think right now, they're probably behind schedule from where I thought they would be. Chicago was an excellent chance to get a win. Cleveland last week, when you consider what else happened in the division, you got three teams at 2-2 right now.
Yeah.
And if you lose this one, you got to go to Buffalo next week, which I think you guys saw in the season opener. Buffalo is a lot better than what we all thought at the beginning of the year. In 2 weeks, you got to go to Detroit, which with Calvin Johnson and that crew is going to be in a test. And then at the end of the month, you got the Jets here at home, which, who knows how that's going to go. And then you got to go to Miami on 4 days rest. So it's almost like for the month of October, the Bengals are unofficial members of the AFC East since they're going to run the table on them 4 out of the next 5 games. And the AFC East teams in the past have given Marvin trouble, I think. For his career, he's something like 3-16 or 6-19 against AFC.
Yeah, and I think that's a great number, and it's also bizarre. Any clues to why it is what it is?
I know against Buffalo, it didn't matter who the head coach who was here. I think there was an 11-12 game losing streak against the Bills. I know up until 2007, there was a long losing streak here against Miami, New England. Tom Brady was on the sidelines the last time the Bengals beat the Patriots, but he wasn't playing because it was that 2001 opener. And then in the next game, Drew got hurt, and the Brady era kind of began that way. I think Tom's had their number a little bit when you look at his passer rating and everything. It's just one of those where they see them so infrequently that certain teams have their numbers and have been on long winning streaks. I think the Jets kind of got a 4 or 5 game winning streak against these guys too.
Interesting. Well, Joe, it's kind of interesting to see this Bengals team, because I actually thought that Cincinnati, at least they were my, thought that they would win this division. They may ultimately get there. I'm intrigued by the balance of the talent. Some of it looks like it's beginning to come out. Others seem like they're underachieving a little bit. Is there any extra pressure on a guy like Marvin Lewis, even after last year's, successes that they had in trying to sort of right this track again, if this team should fall back a little bit, what does that say?
I definitely think there's pressure, because it's kind of a high wire act with fans around here. When you've been used to losing and underachieving for so long, at the slightest inclination that things are going to go south again, I think the pressure gets worse. Definitely after this Cleveland game, probably in my 5-6 years on the beat, this was the game where I received the most angry emails of all, because a lot is expected of this team and everything, and people still have memories of 2010 when expectations were high.
Right.
They had a 10-game losing streak and finished 4-12. So I think the pressure's ramped up a little. And I think, especially with Dalton, a lot of people gave Carson Palmer a pass here for 8-9 years, that now whoever follows him, and especially Andy, when a quarterback struggles, any free pass that Carson got or any criticisms that Carson should have gotten during this time here now fall on Andy, and it's probably twice as bad.
Good stuff, Joe. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of time today with us. We greatly appreciate it.
No problem. See you guys on Sunday.
All right. Absolutely. Yep. It's Joe Reedy. Covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Joining us here on the playbook.
Expectations should be high for that team with all the talent that they have. But
I kind of feel the same way. I mean, honestly, I like the Hard Knocks series. I realize it's kind of been there, done that after a few years. But it's still.
Tradition now.
It is kind of traditional. It kind of get me in the football mood in the summertime.
Right.
And I like the insight that it shows. I like seeing the guys joke. I like see James Harrison, telling the cameras to screw. I like all that stuff. Frankly, because I think a lot of these times, as I said earlier, I think these guys play to the cameras, but I think it also can show that, some real, some things that, that you don't necessarily get a chance to see. And I think that was the whole idea behind the series. And I came away from watching that series this summer impressed the point that I said, wow, Cincinnati's got some talent.
Yeah.
And I thought, again, by looking at the schedule, I said, wow, that Week 5 matchup against the Bengals is going to be really, really tough, especially since you got to go play them there. You're coming off of the Atlanta game. You weren't sure what you were going to have, because of the youth that we are going through now in New England. You and I, and we talked about this yesterday, and it probably bears repeating here as we begin to go back toward the prediction angle of things here, that this was a game before the season started we thought the Patriots would lose.
Mm-hmm. And I still do, but I think it's going to be like last week turned out to be closer than was comfortable for fans.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the end there.
Right.
But I think, I don't know, I still think that there are enough troubles on this team, exemplified by the signing of Austin Collie, that I'm still nervous about picking them against a team with that much talent.
All right, then let's get to some of the comments, questions, criticisms, phone calls. Again, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free line. Sean in Vancouver, thanks for hanging on, my man. You're up first in the playbook.
All right, thanks. I see, Eric, you're still not quite believing in this team. You'll come around. It'll work out.
You know what? No, all right, I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I was the guy, I should preface that, that was one point off, but it wasn't really as close as that, because I should remind everybody that I fully expected Gronk to be in Atlanta, and he wasn't. So I was, even more impressed with that victory, putting up 30 without your key weapons on Atlanta's defense, even though it was hurting, was pretty damn good. So they're improving every week. But yeah, my concerns this week go to the injuries with Will Fork. As we were talking about before, is the law firm going to run up the middle for 4 yards of carry, and that'll be a big trouble for New England if that happens.
Yes, it will.
Also, on the offense, with all these injuries, I don't know if, you know, our weapons are going to be at running back, you know, just Blunt, you know, and then at tight end, Mulligan and Michael Manoa-Nui, and then at wide receiver, is it just going to be Edelman, Cauley, and I don't even know who else.
Well, you better hope Cauley doesn't have to play this
week. If he has to play this week, this team is in real trouble.
You better hope he's one of the seven inactives.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have either Josh Boyce or Aaron Dobson, or, I mean, wow, or Kimbrell Tompkins. I mean, if you're missing those guys, then you're in trouble.
They're all on the list, and with the Patriots, you never know what's really, you know, happening with that list. So it concerns me, and I'm still going to go with the Patriots. I'm going to hope that some of these guys are there, and I'm going to say it's close, 13-10.
13-10, low-scoring affair.
I agree with the low-scoring part of it.
All right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Sean, any quick thoughts again on Cauley's addition? And when you heard it, what was your initial thought?
My thought is, oh boy, I hope that's just for practice this week, and these guys can come back, because, you know, I believe Tompkins is getting better, and Dobson was looking pretty good until that injury, so... the young guys were improving, and if we can get Amendola and Gronk back on the field, we're really going to get somewhere offensively. But if we have to bring out a guy like Austin Cauley off the street, it's not good news.
Yeah, I would have to concur where that's concerned. All right, Sean, good stuff. Thank you very much. And by the way, I should probably add here as well that I've come around to what you said yesterday, that you thought actually somewhat strangely it was more likely that Amendola came back this week than Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't agreeing with you yesterday. I'm agreeing with you today. Just through reading, listening, observing, watching,
mm-hmm.
I kind of think that may be the case. In fact, I'll be mildly surprised if Amendola does not play Sunday.
I think I agree with that, yeah.
I will also be surprised now if Gronk does play. That's my gut.
Yeah,
that's what my gut's telling me today.
I would agree with you too. I would agree with that too. Before we continue, some more breaking news. This isn't NFL related, but this is a little bit more important.
Go.
With the government shutdown going on, there have been shots fired reportedly outside the U.S. Capitol building in D.C.
Good God.
Officers injured, it's looking like, but this is all developing as we're speaking at 3:15 in the afternoon Eastern time.
Wow.
So turn on if you have,
if you have
any access to
you have your
to,
Fox or CNN, there you go.
Put a television on or something and see what's going on. But
this is just, you know, first of all, I wasn't, you know, we weren't, this is obviously a sports show. For those that are probably listening to us overseas, and reside overseas, you know, the fact of the matter that the United States government has decided to shut itself down as it is because of the budgetary, you know, political brouhaha that's going on between our political parties here in the United States, is really just nothing short of pure, unadulterated stupidity.
Mm.
And the fact that our politicians continue to receive salaries while this is going on, it absolutely is revolting to me. And they should all step down and resign because of this, including the president, I might add, because there's no need for this. There's no excuse for it. And you've got almost 1 million employees of the U.S. government out of work because you've got, you know, all these guys who are, I don't even know how to describe them. Special interest freaks who are just, you know, standing their ground and they're stomping and whining like petulant children. This is not what politics is supposed to be about.
No.
It's supposed to be about, you know,
negotiation and
public service and agreement and figuring out where the common ground is.
Yeah.
And there's no common ground at all with either side or either part of the House in the U.S. government. And it's pure stupidity and they all suck and they need to get out.
Yeah. Expediency. Their own expediency is what they're after.
Precisely. I mean, you said it better than I did. I just said they suck.
I agree.
All right. Eldridge in North Carolina. You're up next in the playbook.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Good, Eldridge.
How you doing?
Hey, man. I won't leave that policy thing alone, but I agree with you, John. This one is stupid. They shouldn't get paid.
No, they should not. They absolutely should not. If there's almost 1 million federal employees who are out of work, then these guys also need to, you know, they need to, you know, forfeit their salaries.
I do too. But getting back to Austin Collins, Gary, what the devil is BG thinking? I'm like you, man. Why not bring back Quentin Sims or Tyquan Underwood or even Taylor Price? All of them out on the street that know the system.
Well, Taylor Price I wouldn't want back. But those other two you mentioned, absolutely.
Yeah, but like I said, speed, size. Quentin Sims don't want to me to show that they take a 10-yard pass and take 5 yards to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't seen it from Boss, Dobson, or Thompson yet. And why they cut him, it really blows my mind one way or the other. But Collie, with all them concussions, I don't know what he's thinking, man. Unless he wants a team full of injured reserves, that's what I can think of. You know?
I don't know. John and I are both perplexed by this.
Yeah, I wish there was a hard and fast answer, but you know, it seems like, unfortunately, you know, the more questions that, you know, the media try to ask around here lately, the more non-answers we get. So, you know, it's maddening. You know, it's very difficult for anyone who's asking a football question to get a football answer. And unfortunately, injuries are a part of football. We need answers to these questions, and we're always told, well, when we have something, we'll give it to you.
Yes. Well, see, there's one thing I keep wondering about, too, because if you look at it, where they brought Cole back, okay, they could jinx Davis. Okay, Wilford is hurt. Okay, then they really don't have a whole 53-man roster. But they got a couple slots. Why didn't they try to fill them, you know, in them particular areas? You know, like cornerback or defensive tackle and receiver. I don't understand that either, you know, because you got slots. And even they cut two up the practice squad, right?
Right, right.
So, that's 60. And I don't see them besides Collie. I mean, if they can't do better than Collie, I don't know, but I think Mr. Pratt should take charge a little bit more than letting Bill do it.
Well, that won't happen, and frankly, I'm not so sure it should happen, only because, you know, Mr. Kraft has hired people to be in place to do their jobs, and one of the things he has usually done is he's allowed people to do their jobs, like he's allowing us to do ours right now. So, but I do think that we are within our rights to ask why you're making this move from a strategic point of view, because it really doesn't, to the lay people that we are, compared to the coaching staff, it doesn't seem to make any sense. So please help us idiots understand.
That's what I'm saying. I'm an idiot too, coming to football, but I know Taylor's been what I think. I can't say because he get paid.
Right. But right. All right. What's your prediction? What
prediction?
Yeah.
Does everybody hurt, man?
prediction. Pain.
Pain. Yeah. I like that one. I forgot that one. Mr. T.
That's right.
21-17.
21-17.
Prediction.
Yeah.
Pain.
There we go.
Which team, Eldridge?
Man, I want to say New England, but I got to go Cincinnati.
So you're going to go Cincinnati 21-17?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the back and the receiver wise. Because after a while, Brady got to run down there and catch it, throw it, catch it too.
Yeah.
So they ain't got nobody to throw it too.
Right.
But in all aspects, anybody inkling about is they trying to hire a failed back or a ballast? Because Mulligan looks pretty good.
Yeah, got it. All right, okay, Eldridge.
21-17.
We got you down for that one, and I actually think that's probably a pretty good pick.
Yeah.
Steve and Colleen, good morning, Steve, or good afternoon, as the case may be.
Good morning, gentlemen, or afternoon, as the case may be. I'm going to start by taking us back to 1979 real quick, and a classic movie, Meatballs, because that's what we'll be sounding like. It, you know, when's Wilford going to be taken off the roster? We just don't know. Is Gronk and Amendola going to be back? We just don't know.
Yeah.
Why do we bring in Collie? We just don't know.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of my feeling. Because there's a lot that we just don't know. But looking ahead to this game, you know, even with the question marks, I have to agree. I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair. But I think Dalton will probably make some sort of blunder that will give us 21, and, you know, I see maybe a score or two for the Bengals, but somehow the defense is able to shore it up, and I'm going to give them 13. So 13-21 for the Pats.
21-13 New England, okay.
Yeah, that I don't have a real strong, you know, warm fuzzy on that one, John, to be honest with you, just given – just a number of unknowns.
Well, it is a kind of a it causes you to stop and think, because Cincinnati has definitely struggled with the ball on offense. We saw that last week. They have played much better at home, and I do think that that's a consideration. I do think that Andy Dalton's playing somewhat under fire now because of the struggles that he's had. I do think that they will take advantage of Vince Wilfork's absence in the middle of the lineup, and I do think that they will try to run the ball, control the clock, keep the ball out of Tom Brady's hands as best as they possibly can, and then hopefully their front four, again, who will be without Michael Johnson, we're assuming here, because of the concussion issue that he's had to face now, they can put still enough pressure on Brady to make life somewhat miserable for him. And it's going to come down to one very simple fact, Steve. Can Cincinnati outscore New England? Sounds silly, but really, that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, again, execution. And can our defense bring enough pressure without Vince being there and without knowing, you know, who's going to be stepping up to do that? You know, I like Joey the Hitman Villano. He gets his sacks, but, again, he's an undersized defender to try and shore up that position for Vince. And it goes back to kind of what we discussed as the season began. We were all concerned, the PFW guys, yourself, and, you know, most of Patriots Nation, if we're honest, about depth.
Well, I actually think, Steve, that this is going to be a situation that, you know, you could see Brandon Spikes play more just because of his ability to play against the run. If they're pounding the middle of the Patriots defense, I would think that Spikes would be a large part of a potential solution.
Yeah, they'll be in base more if they're running, you know, if Cincinnati's running the football more, the New England will be in their traditional base defense.
I think we'll
more.
See the Patriots in that base defense more, not so much in the nickel, and I think that's what you'll see them. I'd be surprised if you didn't see them at least come out in it and then maybe adjust to it, depending on what Cincinnati's throwing them offensively. But I think the Patriots have to be ready for that first and foremost, because you have to feel like, look, you know, hey, there's your injury. There's your where you're wounded. There's your Achilles heel, literally. Mm. Wilfork's not in the lineup. So what are you going to do? You're going to try to beef that up. And I think Spikes and his strength is clearly the stuff to run. You might even see him on run blitzes just to, you know, try to, you know, put the force of impact at the line and not let somebody, you know, get into the linebacking and or secondary running back wise. Because with both of those guys, as we've seen, when Cincinnati has success, that's where they excel, is when they get past that initial burst at the line of scrimmage 3 or 4 yards deep. I think this is going to be time for Brandon Spikes to show what he's worth.
True, and also don't discount the fact that we have familiarity with the law firm, too. So, I mean, we know what he's capable of.
He's very capable. I think we've seen that as a former 1,000-yard rusher here in New England.
Right, you know, Bill and the Wile E. Coyote planning that happens under the hoodie, you know, it's
right.
Going to be kind of what we're going to place our faith in this week, John, at least for me,
right.
That they're going to come up with some sort of scheme. I'm expecting a whole bunch of shifts and substitutions for the defense. And I'm hoping that our offensive line can, you know, shore up and do what they need to do.
Right.
Because, you know, love Edelman, but the one thing that we keep going back to is, okay, we've got these guys who have obvious talent, Gronk, Amendola, Edelman. But if they're not available, their talent means jack.
Right.
So that's
right.
Kind of where we are this week. Week 5 is one of those where, you know, if the Pats walk away with this one, you know, like you guys were with Atlanta, I was kind of like, yeah, I didn't know about Atlanta.
You consider yourself somewhat fortunate, right?
Yeah, like you said, we're playing with house money right now, and I'm hoping that we can kind of run the table at least one more week.
I think that's a good way to put it, Steve. All right, thanks for the phone call. Let's let Alan Valdosta, Georgia, get his thoughts in here real quick. Hey, Al.
Fellas, how you doing?
Good.
Real quick,
I'm predicting the Patriots win. This is a more important game, really, than last week's. Last week's was a lot of hype. It didn't surprise me that Amendola and Gronkowski didn't play last week. Really, in terms of the season, with the tiebreakers, I've always believed the AFC games are more important than the NFC game. Of course, you want to win every week, and I'm glad we won last week. But this week, actually, to me, is a more important game than last week. And so I wouldn't surprise me if both Amendola and Gronkowski played this week.
Well, if they do, I'm going to feel a lot better about this team's chances to win. If one of them comes back, I'm going to feel better about this team's chances to win. Right now, we don't know that either one will be back, especially based on today's signing.
Well, absolutely. And it's just something as Patriots fans, I know it frustrates you being in the building, but it's just something we're never going to know. We're never going to know when these guys are going to play.
Right.
And until maybe, right, it's going to be this game time decision or whatever. But I just, as a piss in the wind, forgive me prediction, I think they're both going to play this week because I think this game is a more important game in terms of the season.
Okay.
These AFC games.
AFC game, right.
I believe, I've always thought this, John, that, you know, obviously you want to win every week. 16-0, I loved it.
Right.
But look, if you ask me what's the perfect season, realistically, if you got a good team and you've got a shot at it, you're not the Jaguars or whatever, you got a good shot at it, I'd like to see a team go 14-2, where they win 14 games and the two games they lose are outside the conference.
Right.
And we've got two wins outside the conference right now, Tampa Bay and Atlanta. So, to me, the Atlanta win, what that does is that means we're playing with the house's money, like you, I think, said earlier in the week. So, if we drop the Saints game at home coming up in a couple of weeks, it's not the end of the world. We won at Atlanta. We had the Saints at home. If you split those two, I think you're doing okay.
All right. Give us your score then for this week.
I'm saying the Pats are going to win big. I think it's going to be 28-10, Pats.
28-10, Pats. Wow. Okay. Al is down for 28-10. Dave and Dave, my apologies. I hit the wrong button. That's my fault. My bad, Dave. My bad. Call back. I'll get you on. Isaac in Florida. Isaac, I didn't hit the wrong button, did I?
Hello?
Hello, Isaac. How are you? You're in the playbook.
Hey, I was calling. I see that everybody's talking about who Brady's going to throw it to, but I don't see nobody bringing up our run game. I think you guys don't think that we can lean on the run game this game?
Whose run game are you talking about?
The Patriots run game.
Okay, and what about it?
I know you guys are saying about how bad the passing game looked for this week, but nobody's talking about how good the running game looked for this week.
Well, we don't really know how good the running game is going to look because now Stephen Ridley's got an apparent knee injury. So we don't know.
So you don't believe in Blunt?
Not that we don't believe in anybody. It's not our job to believe. It's our job to tell you what we see. So, you know, could he do the job? I assume he could. But you also have to figure in the equation that Cincinnati has a estimable, opportunity here to be a little bit more competitive on the line of scrimmage. They have a good front four. And they're pretty good also in the linebacking core as well. You remember a guy named James Harrison, don't you?
Yeah, I know that's another thing. Cincinnati front thing is good, but I think we can keep it balanced with the play action. I think we're going to grind this game out. But I'm going to go ahead and give you my prediction. I see us getting this game 14-13 Pats.
14-13. Ooh! Wow, I actually like that one, Isaac. And by the way, Isaac, you bring up a very good point because this is where the Patriots scored big last week and were able to put 30 up on Atlanta, regardless of what you thought of Atlanta's defense. Play action. And I do believe that will probably be utilized quite heavily this week, you know, for the Patriots. All right, Dave. My apologies. I just hit the wrong button. Dave?
Hey, guys.
There
good
you are.
Good show.
Thanks, Dave and Connecticut.
I just want to make some points about the game to start with. I think that, you were talking about how Cincinnati needs to run the ball to kind of control the clock. I think we need to do that as well. I mean, without Vince in there, you know, you said it yourself, it's going to be a sore spot. Now, you know, I'm not saying that the guys that are going to be in there can't do the job, but, you know, it's been full fork. He, you know, Pro Bowl, probably the best nose tackle in the game, and we lost him. But
right.
I think, you know, we can compensate for that. I know that you were talking about Brandon Spikes. He needs to have a huge game, okay, you know, with the run blitz or whatever. I mean, you know, I affectionately call him Bobby Boucher because when he gets going, he looks like he's going to kill somebody, you know. And you just pray he doesn't hit one of our guys, you know, because he's just a beast.
I love that, by the way.
You know, that's what he reminds me of. It's like, you know,
tackling you.
Be mad. And he knocks him out.
Oh, no!
You know?
We suck again!
Yeah, you know? I mean, you know, that's where he's at his best. And I think he needs really, you know, have
we
that
suck
game.
Again.
Yeah, no, not yet. Not yet. But, you know,
it's a great movie
for
liners. For
you guys. You know, we're 4-0, and I couldn't be happier. And, you know, it's kind of like a quiet 4-0. They're talking about Kansas City, of course, Seattle, you know, of course, Denver. You know, we have yet to play our best football. I mean, I think we can all readily admit that. We have not played our best football yet.
Sure. All right.
Ahead of it.
All right. So give us your score then for Sunday.
Okay. I'm saying 27-14. I think the defense is going to have a couple of interceptions and maybe a fumble here. And, you know, it's definitely a winnable game. You know, I know that Cincinnati has, you know, Akins, and they have a real good, you said it yourself, defense seven there. And I think we need to run the ball. We have to have balance. I mean, against the Falcons, we had, what, 31 passes?
Right.
31 runs. So, you know, that's perfect almost.
Okay.
Can't have that every week. But I think if we choose to run the ball and have some drives here, it's also going to help the defense out.
Okay.
You know, it's going to keep Andy Dalton off the field.
All right.
You know?
All right.
I know we're kind of weak in receiver. You know, hopefully you know, Dobson will play, and, you know, who knows?
Well, again, we won't know that for at least a couple more days, and we got to see what the injury report says today and how Austin Colley may or may not figure into that particular equation. And, Dave, thank you for the call on the prediction. Mm-hmm. He says 27-14. He said 14.
14? Oh,
okay. He said 27-14. I want to give him full credit.
Okay.
I've got a ton of emails. I've got, you know, Facebook posts. I got tweets. I am going to get to in hour number two. But since we're at the top of the hour here, and Russell's coming up shortly, you want to give your prediction again for Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's going to be close, relatively low scoring for what we're used to seeing from this team. Bengals 24, Patriots 20.
24-20?
Mm.
I've got Bengals 17, Patriots 16.
Mm, really tight.
Really tight.
How does it turn out that way? Bengals get a touchdown or a field goal late, or
I think that I actually think that the Patriots will play comeback here in this one. I think Cincinnati's got a comfort level at home that will probably get them out to a lead. I think that they will take advantage of the Patriots defensively early before in-game adjustments come. I think that if the Patriots are, and I'm banking right now based on the signing today, that they're banged up more in the receiving core than we've been led to believe, that Brady will have a hard time taking advantage and exploiting what we think is the Achilles heel, there's that pun again, of the Cincinnati defense, and that's their secondary. I don't think he'll be able to quite get what he wants out of it. The Patriots have to settle for some field goals. They might get either a field goal or a touchdown late to pull up close, and kind of like Atlanta, maybe try to for the onside kick and get it, and Cincinnati's going to hold on.
Wow, really thrilling end then, huh?
I think it'll be a very thrilling end. I think it'll be a great game. I think people say, wow, it's tough that we lost this one, but let's move on to next week. We're back home. And that's what I think.
Okay.
Now, this all changes, however. I'm going to stick with 17-16, but this all changes
if
Gronk and Amendola are out, because that gives them a weapon that they can really attack the Cincinnati secondary with. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that is their weakness, and I think you're going to have to go over the top, and unlike, you know, our friend in Connecticut here, I think you have to go over the top and throw the ball to beat Cincinnati, because Cincinnati has the tough front seven.
Mm.
Just my thoughts.
Okay.
My 2 cents worth.
All right.
Okay. A lot more to do here, but we do have some business to take care of, as we always do.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
How did I do yesterday?
You did well. Miss Robin was very pleased.
Did she know it?
Yes, she did.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, good.
She did.
All right.
Stump the teacher today.
Yeah. Well, we'll try. But I'm going to play off of the day's developments here in Foxborough with the signing of Austin Colley, and say that, John, you and I have been nonplussed by it.
That's a great one. That's a good one. Nonplussed.
Bewildered, befuddled, surprised to a point where you are left speechless.
I am, nonplussed.
Mm.
I love that one. That is appropriate today. That one I also knew.
Good.
I actually have used that in some of my writing and column.
Oh, good.
Too, yeah. I like that. And I think it's very appropriate, because people kind of scratch their head and go, what?
Yeah.
What is that? And I said, exactly my feeling. I'm kind of like going, what?
It's a word that sounds like it's confused.
It is. It's Doesn't a confusing it? Word.
The word itself right. just sounds yeah. like it's a befuddled it word.
I like that one. Nonplussed.
So yeah.
We are all a bit nonplussed around here today over the signing of Austin Collie.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what to make out of it. A little confused, a little bewildered, left with questions that will largely go unanswered.
Right.
So that's where we are today.
Right.
Before you go, mm-hmm. if you don't mind here for a second, and before we move on back to the issue of Patriots and Bengals and Russell Baxter coming in, I wanted to take just a moment only because it's a football-related story.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of you who don't know me well, forgive me. I'll apologize in advance. But those of you who do know me well over the course of the last 13 years doing the show probably have come to know that I am a native of Texas. I'm a graduate of the University of Texas at Austin. And even though Strippers and I kind of go head-to-head here on some things, he doesn't contribute to the show as much anymore. And I think it's just because I don't know why. But he will appreciate this gentleman probably as much as any listener that we have. I lost a friend this week, and today was his funeral in Austin, Texas. I wasn't great friends with him. I was, you know, an acquaintance more than a real friend, but he always made me feel like I was a friend of his. He was always, you know, with an arm around the shoulder, slapping my, you know, my back with a hand out extended. Nice to see you. James Street. Was the quarterback of the 1969 and 70 Texas Longhorn football team, and 68, 69, I actually should say 70 Cotton Bowl, died of a heart attack earlier this week. Today was his funeral in Austin, Texas. This was the guy, you know how kids grow up and think that they're, you know, kids my era, they grow up and they think that, you know, they want to play in the backyard as Johnny U or Bart Starr or Earl Morrill or someone like that. I grew up wanting to be James Street.
Really?
This is the guy.
Yeah.
And the reason I grew up wanting to be James Street was, quite frankly, because all the guy did was win. He was 20-0 as a starting quarterback at Texas. Never lost a game as a starter.
Now 2nd and 9 for Texas. Start of the fourth quarter. Jimmy Street in trouble. Gets away. There he goes. And Texas is on the Super Bowl.
That was Chris Schenkel, the late, great Chris Schenkel, on the call of James Street's fourth-quarter touchdown run, first play of the fourth quarter in the what was then known as the Big Shootout, but the first game of the century in 1969. It's Texas versus Arkansas. And that was the first game, very historical as far as football today is concerned, the first game that was moved for television. It was the first national championship game that was decided by television. It was also the very last time that two teams competed for a championship who were all white. And that was December the 6th, 1969. James Street was the quarterback of that Texas team, as you heard. That was his. Mm-hmm. That was the call on ABC television by Chris Schenkel of his touchdown run, first play of the fourth quarter, that Texas was down 14-0. He scored on a two-point conversion run on the next play. And then he threw what was probably considered the game of the century, of the play of the century, because this was the anniversary of the 100th year of football in our country. Started in 1869 with Princeton versus Rutgers, yep. And I know you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And the play of the century in the game of the century came a little bit later in the fourth quarter on a 44-yard out route to his tight end who never caught a ball all year, and he caught it in double coverage.
Wow.
Randy Peschel, and that what led Texas to a 15-14 win. President Nixon came to the locker room in the height of the Vietnam War era and awarded Texas the national championship and pissed off everybody from Penn State, including Joe Paterno, and it was a big deal back then, if anybody's old enough to remember.
West conference battle, 4:47 to go. Arkansas leading 14-8. Her face certainly reflecting the team she's rooting for, Texas. As we have now, a most crucial fourth down play again for the Longhorns. At their own 43.5. And going for broke to Randy Peschel. And Peschel catches the ball. What a toss. Randy Peschel.
That play still causes me to tear up. As someone who, you cut me, I bleed orange, as a Longhorn fan, I still get emotional when I hear that call by Chris Schenkel. By the way, Chris Schenkel, I don't know if you knew this, he has Rhode Island ties.
Oh, yeah?
New England ties. He worked in Rhode Island radio after he got out of the Army in World War II.
Must be in your book then.
Yes. He actually called the horse track races at the old Narragansett Park in Pawtucket and East Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, wow.
And he did this for about 6 years before he became the voice of the New York Giants football team.
Oh.
So there's a little New England tie to Chris Schenkel.
Well,
anyway, but I wanted to say that today that my heart and
he became a friend of yours,
Chris Schenkel.
No, James Street.
James Street. Yes. Thank you for setting me back on track here. I met James originally back in 1979 when I was a student at University of Texas, and I did a story back then for the Daily Texan. I was assistant editor for the paper on the 10-year anniversary of this game of the big shootout. And he was still a young guy then. He was only 32 years old. He could not have been nicer. Talking to a Cub reporter, he could have big-shotted me all over the place. He never did. I had run into him on a couple of other occasions through the years, because obviously it wasn't soon thereafter, another 8 or 9 years, that I actually moved up to New England. Ran into him again about 3 or 4 years ago with my son in tow and my two nephews, also are very much aware. And we were in Austin, and he said, "Hi, John, how are you? It's nice to see you." I'm stunned. First and foremost, that he remembered who I was. But he said, "Yeah, I remember you. You know, you wrote for the Daily Texan." And so I was floored. And so, you know, my kids laughed at me simply because they saw my jaw on the ground, because they knew that I worshiped the guy. He was my hero. Like I said, I played him in the backyard pickup games. I was James Street. I wasn't Bart Starr or Roger Staubach or anybody else. I was James Street. And so he introduced himself to the boys as, "I'm Houston's dad," because his son is Houston Street. Who, you know, was MVP of the series in 2005, I think it was. Former University of Texas pitcher as well, and still, you know, pitches now, I think, for the San Diego Padres. And they knew who he was. They knew that, you know, yeah, he may have been Houston's dad, but they also knew that he was a guy that I looked up to and considered at least a casual friend. And so my heart and my thoughts are with a lot of my friends and a lot of the people that I've grown up with and a lot of people that I've shared Texas football with through the better part of 5 decades that I've been alive, as they you know, celebrate his life today in Austin, Texas. So thank you for allowing me to say that today.
Of course.
Yeah. So there you go. But now you understand some of the lunacy behind, you know, the way that I think and reason the way that I do.
I am I'm well acquainted with your lunacy.
Safe travels to Cincinnati.
Thank you. Any recommendations on
Yes.
Yeah.
Montgomery Inn. Go to the Montgomery Inn for the baby back ribs. Oh my God.
That's what I've heard.
They're unbelievable.
I think I went there last time. Comes
right off the bone. You will love them. And if you need a quick fix of something fast,
yeah,
honestly, go to Skyline Chili.
Oh, I've heard both of those places
really
mentioned
good.
This week.
I happen to like Skyline. I'm a big
fan. All right.
You know, like the little get it four way. That has the spaghetti, the chili, the cheese, and the onions. No beans.
Okay. All right.
Your roommates will thank you.
Do you still room with B-Lo?
Yeah, when he travels.
He travels. Yeah.
So
B-Lo will thank
this
week.
B-Lo will thank you.
He's traveling this
week. He will thank you. Yeah. So just go with the four-way, not all the way.
Okay.
Okay? If you decide to do Skyline Chili, because I'm a big fan of Skyline Chili and the Montgomery Inn ribs. You can't go wrong.
Okay.
Can't go wrong.
All right.
All right.
I will see you next week.
See you next week. All right. Take the quick break. Russell Baxter in the playbook.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down. 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance, dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Well, into hour number two inside the playbook, John Rook continuing with you. And as the man said, time to get inside the NFL, go around the league on a prediction Thursday with the one and only pro football guru himself, Russell Baxter. Let me just make sure that I get the phone thing up here. Hi, Russell. How are you today?
Breaker 19, I'm here.
I'm having a hard time button punching today. I've already hung up on a couple of callers, so I know.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I know. Tough day today. I don't know.
Room.
Yeah, well, a tough, you know. I'm a little distracted, and I know you will know this name, but you're probably aware that the great college quarterback that he was, James Street, University of Texas, died this week.
Oh, my goodness.
You didn't know that.
No, I did not.
He did, and you remember him back from 68, 69.
The name is familiar. I wasn't into college football as much as I was.
Right. Well, it's because
I know the name.
Yeah, he was never drafted, and he was actually probably even a better baseball pitcher than he was as a quarterback. But James was an acquaintance, and his funeral was today in Austin. You know, he's probably best known to current sports fans as Houston Street's father.
Huh.
But he was the quarterback of that 69 Texas-Arkansas game team that Richard Nixon awarded the national championship to, and Texas beat Arkansas. That was the game that Beano Cook, who is our late great friend that we shared at ESPN, Beano Cook, he got Rune Arledge to change the date of the game from mid-October to the last game of the year in December because he thought both teams would be really, really good and they could play for the national title on the very last game of the centennial year of football. That was Beano's deal.
Well, the thing I'd be more interested in is what kind of game tape did President Nixon have on both teams?
I don't know, but President Nixon came on at halftime of that game, and I have the videotape. A friend of mine recorded it and gave it to me in an old VHS, the ABC game film, really, literally, feed from that game in 69. It's really funny to see all the Chevrolet commercials from 69 on there. But Nixon came on at halftime with Chris Schenkel and predicted that Texas would come back and win that game. He predicted it.
But here's what I would like to know. You said you have a copy of that tape.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, are there 18 and a half minutes missing from that tape?
Where's the rim shot? Kevin, you got to have that dessert. Yeah, thank you. Oh, my goodness.
Rim shot, I should get the gong for that one.
Only if you're a member of the Republican Party. That's outstanding. That's a good job by you. All right, good stuff today. So yeah, I'm a little distracted. At any rate, we got some interesting things this week. Without, you know, question, it's always interesting around here. I will start with the Thursday night game only because I know some are probably going, "Oh God, here we go." But it is a divisional opponent, and it is a team in Cleveland at home tonight that beat this same team that the Patriots are playing this week, and the Bills are playing at the Browns tonight.
Well, listen, in this day and age, you know, one of these teams is going to be 3-2 tonight, barring a tie.
Right.
And if you're the, you know, the Buffalo Bills, who are trying to still kind of make the name for themselves, especially on the road, you know, so far so good with a couple of home wins, coming off beating the defending Super Bowl champion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Cleveland Browns, you're trying to build the momentum of a two-game winning streak after scoring 16 points in your first two games.
Right.
So there's some promising things here. I know Buffalo-Cleveland, okay, you know, the battle for Lake Erie, whatever. But you look at what Buffalo has done, John, with E.J. Manuel, Robert Woods, and Kiko Alonso, their first three picks. Pretty good trio so far. And, you know, something for promise for the Buffalo Bill fans who have not had a lot of luck with draft picks over the last decade or so. The Browns with Brian Hoyer, obviously Patriot fans are very familiar with him, and Jordan Cameron, who I believe has, the Browns have scored, I think, 64 points this year, and Jordan Cameron has 30 of them. I think the Browns have scored 7 touchdowns this year, and he has 5 of them, I believe. Or something in that area. But in other words, the tight end has been a big part of what they've done this year. So I'm kind of curious to see both of these teams tonight. Can Cleveland win a game, John? They're expected to win. Or can Buffalo go on the road and knock off an AFC North opponent? By the way, I'm now officially rooting for the Cleveland Browns and the New Orleans Saints to meet in the Super Bowl. Because I don't know if this has ever happened in the history of the NFL. Jordan Cameron would face off against Cameron Jordan.
I like it. I like it. I like that a lot. That would be definitely worth rooting for.
Well, it's not 18 and a half minutes of missing tape, but
no.
It might be worth another rim shot.
I know. You know, honestly, yeah. Can we get him another rim shot there, Kev? Okay. You deserve that. You deserve that. I think that's very good. You're doing your homework. All right, so that's Thursday night. It looks like one of the premier games of the week may very well involve next week's Patriot opponent as the Saints go on the road to play, you know, the Chicago Bears. So you got 4-0 meeting 3-1.
Yeah, and you've got Jay Cutler, who was sacked 3 times in the first 3 games and got sacked 3 times last week against the Lions. He had 4 turnovers. Bears kind of made it interesting at the end. But, you know, I've been wondering about their defense all year without the takeaways. And they still managed to get 3 takeaways last week when it was all said and done. But teams have moved the ball on the Bears. And, you know, Reggie Bush had a great night, great afternoon against them. Detroit really took it to them. They're worth talking about, certainly this year. The Bears, with Cutler also, we have seen in the past where they have started out so strong and then went into a little bit of a fade. But those takeaways, that's a big part of this game because you have a Bears team that has at least 3 takeaways in every game they played this year, and they have 14 for the season. The Saints have 10 takeaways. Both these teams are plus 5 in turnover differential. Both these teams, you know, Drew Brees off to another Drew Brees type of start. Obviously, Cutler, when protected. But I think he's played well for the most part this season. Again, a rough afternoon last week. But how about the tight end battle, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Martellus Bennett, who has been a big part of what the Bears have done this year, and Jimmy Graham,
yeah,
458 yards receiving in four games,
yeah,
six touchdowns.
Yeah, he's phenomenal right now.
Here's
yeah.
Here's something to keep an eye on that might surprise you. Drew Brees has thrown 10 touchdown passes this year, pretty good. Only two of them to wide receivers.
That is interesting. Six of them to Graham, right?
Six to Graham, one to Watson, one to Sproles.
Wow. Do you like the Saints to do this on the road?
Tough place to play. We'll get into the whole 4-0 thing, by the way.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked. Safe to say that the Saints know a little something about the new left tackle of the Chicago Bears named Jermon Bushrod,
mm-hmm,
and what he can and what he can't do. But what he has done so far, and like I said, they've done a good job protecting him. I'm still not convinced the Saints are a great run defense, and I could see Matt Forte having a pretty big day here, shortening the game to a degree. And Jimmy Graham, I think, will get his yards,
mm-hmm,
and so will Sproles against that linebacking corps. I think I'd have to still lean the Bears at home. This is one of many toss-up games this week. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll try a couple of the others here, but I'll start at least with another 4-0 versus 3-1 game. It may be the most surprising 4-0 versus 3-1 that's on the board. Chiefs playing at the Titans. What the heck is going on in the wide, wide world of sports here?
I don't know. Are you talking about the Dallas Texans versus the Houston Oilers?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly. Here's one that might surprise you. We have heard all year about Kansas City and its great ball security. By the way, plus 9. 12 takeaways by the Chiefs already this year, too. They only had 13 all of last season.
And they were dead last in that last year. So that's clearly to me. Yeah.
Right. Tied for last in takeaways, tied for last in turnovers.
Right.
Hence, minus 24.
Right.
But you know there's actually, it's not the Chiefs. There's only one team in this league right now that has not turned over the ball through the first 4 weeks of play.
Who could that be?
That could be the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Who will start a familiar face to Patriots fans this week in Ryan Fitzpatrick, now that Jake Locker is hurt.
Yep.
Much more aggressive Tennessee team. Not surprising after what happened to them last year when they gave up that team record for points. But this is kind of a, you know, who would have thunk this? I mean, even Tennessee wins, and Kansas City obviously would lose, who expected both the Titans and the Chiefs to both be 4-1 5 weeks into the season? If the Chiefs go to 5-0, they're doing it a different way than Denver. They're doing it the polar opposite. They are playing some ferocious defense. I'd love to go back to that number where last year in opening week they gave up 40 points and lost to Atlanta. They're now four games into the season, John. They've given up a total of 41 points.
Ooh, that's amazing. 1 year, I mean, you know, that's just, you know, 1 week turnaround. Forget that. 1 year turnaround. Mm-hmm. That's impressive. Somebody's doing the job, and you kind of wonder if Andy Reid didn't know that what he was kind of stepping into.
Well, when you it's funny you should say that because the Chiefs won two games and his Eagles won four games last year.
Yeah,
which adds up to six.
Yeah,
which is conveniently the number of Pro Bowlers the Chiefs had last year.
You're on a roll today, man. You're just on a roll.
No, I'm on a rim shot. The roll comes next week.
So. Okay. Well, oh. Yeah, see, there you go.
There you go.
You must be lobster salad because you on a roll, brother. All right. Yeah, thank you very much. The other 4-0, 3-1, Seattle at Indianapolis.
Mm.
Yeah, you know what? I actually think this might be the game of the week. Outside of our own, of course.
I'll tell you something. Seattle, it's funny because Seattle, as people say, is a different team away from home. But I don't think people realize how much better they've been on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You go back their last six road games, including the playoffs, John, they're 5-1 on the road. Their only road loss was the Atlanta game, which they were down 20, took the lead, and then wound up losing the game. This is a team that might not be pretty on the road. And, by the way, Pete Carroll's not worried about BCS points. But they've won their last four regular season road games. Went to Chicago and beat them in overtime. Went to Carolina first week of the season. And then last week, down 20-3 at the half, and outgained 324-88, shut out the Houston Texans the rest of the game, wound up winning 23-20. They won their last nine regular season games. But this is I don't think anybody's surprised the Colts are 3-1. I think watching them play the last 2 weeks has been the surprise.
Mm.
This is a mauling Colts team all of a sudden. This is not, Andrew Luck having to carry the load. Seattle is fifth in the league in rushing. The Colts are fourth. And they've been getting a steady running game all year, maybe by committee and so on, and that includes Andrew Luck. But you look at what they've done. Now, everybody's going to hop on the fact, well, wow, big deal. They beat Jacksonville last week 37-3. But was it a big deal when they rolled San Francisco by 20
right.
in the Niners' home park? Not who you play, it's how you play. And this is a team playing much different style football than they were playing last year. By the way, Robert Mathis, 7.5 sacks.
Yeah.
I guess he's adapted to being an outside linebacker after 1 year.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is a tall order for Seattle. Seattle capable of winning this game? After all, of course they are.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting because all anybody will want to talk about in this contest is Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear them now. Russell Wilson have been drafted ahead of Andrew Luck? I'm anticipating the poll questions that are going to be asked and
yeah.
so on.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Andrew Luck is the starter, 14-6. Russell Wilson, 15-5.
Ooh, one
okay.
game.
Both teams in the playoffs last yeah. year. Both teams 11-5 last year. Last year, Russell Wilson tied Peyton Manning's record for touchdown passes by a rookie. Last year, Andrew Luck set the rookie record for passing yards. So two guys worthy of the press. But I'll be watching their defenses, and I'll be watching how each team handles each other's running game. Trent Richardson doesn't have the breakaway ability, but you combine him with the other people in the backfield, it'll be interesting if they try to test Seattle up the middle, who had a tough time with Arian Foster last
right,
week,
right.
no doubt. And I'll really be curious to see how the Colts, who have played much better run defense this year, handle Marshawn Lynch, because handling Marshawn Lynch is just a totally different beast.
The other two Patriot divisional opponents that are playing this week, Dolphins are at home after suffering their first loss. They get the Ravens, and the Jets get to go on the road Monday night and take on the conquered Atlanta Falcons last week by the Patriots.
Yeah, interesting game for Miami because we want to see them respond after a loss. That's funny thing about this league is you can become the talk of the league after a 3-0 start, and then all of a sudden you lose two games in 7 days, and everybody will be, what's wrong with the Dolphins? But I know what's wrong with the Ravens. They're back into that old habit of playing well at home and lousy on the road.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Two games this year at home, they beat Houston and Cleveland, didn't give up a touchdown. Two games on the road against Denver and Buffalo, ouch. Giving up 72 points.
Yeah, a lot.
Last week
yeah.
they gave over 200 yards rushing. Last week, Joe Flacco must have looked at his jersey in the mirror too many times because he threw 5 interceptions.
Yeah, I was about to say, very un-Ravens-like performance. Not expected.
Well, and think about Flacco now here for a second. I believe he has 7 interceptions already this season.
Yes.
5
touchdowns, 7 picks, yes.
Right. Now think and go back. During the regular season last year, Joe Flacco threw 22 touchdowns and only 10 picks. He didn't throw a pick in the playoffs. So that means in 20 games last year, Joe Flacco only threw 10 interceptions.
Right.
He's got 7 in 4 games already.
Right.
But what I'll tell you what was
I'd say he's not trending well, that's for sure.
No, but I'll tell you what was bothersome, though. And you will know this as well as anyone because you remembered the whole circumstances of why the Colts made a change at offensive coordinator late last year with Cam Cameron and then Jim Caldwell replacing him.
Right.
The Ravens ran the ball last week against one of the worst rushing defenses in the league 9 times for 24 yards.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
I don't know if amazing would be the word I'd use, but I know if that was Cam Cameron, we'd be hearing about it all week.
Oh, there's no question about that. Sometimes you can definitely look at the way teams approach a game and figure out, why they lost, because the Ravens kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, and by the way, Kiko Alonso, 2 more interceptions, the rookie from Buffalo. It's 4 for him already this season.
Right. Any reason to think that the Falcons won't bounce back at home against the Jets on Monday night? Or do the Jets, again, based on what we saw, the way the Atlanta came back in that game against the Patriots last week, it tells me now that maybe they've got a little fight in them. But they're 1-3, so they really are backed up against it even more than they were a week ago.
Well, and here's the thing with the Falcons. They've outscored their opponents in the first quarter this year 34-0.
Correct.
And yet, they've given up more points than they've scored this season.
That's right.
That should tell you something.
It tells me a lot that they don't know how to hold on, and they can't come back. And they almost did come back, so I'm wondering if this is now getting more toward the Atlanta team that people thought they'd see.
Well, it's very interesting, and you almost, because by the way, and don't forget, this is the Battle of the Ryans.
Yes.
It might not be Rob and Rex, but it is, you know, Rex and Matt.
That's so true. Okay. Well, different Ryan. But that's all right. Sure.
As I alluded to in my Cold Hard Football Facts piece this week, John, raise your hand if you would have told me 4 weeks into the season the Jets would have a better record than the Falcons.
No, I can't raise my hand because I would not have thought that.
No. But I'll tell you one thing, the Jets do better than the Falcons, and at least in my mind. They play physical football, especially on the offensive line. I think that's one of the reasons the Jets have hung in there this year. I know they got waffled last week, and, you know, for all the talk of Mark Sanchez turning over the football 26 times and 26 times, I think Geno Smith has 11 already this year in four games.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, still, 2-2. Defense, a comer. There's no doubt about it. All those young draft, high first-round draft picks like Wilkerson and Coples, I know, you know, both of them under fire a little because of what happened with Jake Locker last week, but, you know, Sheldon Richardson and some of the other veterans they have there. That defense is not easy. And style-wise, you would think this was a Jets game. But I don't know if the Jets have anybody who can cover Tony Gonzalez. I'm not sure they have anybody who can cover Roddy White or Julio Jones or Harry Douglas either.
Right.
So, to me, I could see this being 17-0 Falcons after one quarter, and I could see the Falcons winning
20-17.
30-24.
Oh, okay. Got it. One other game that I wanted to touch on before we hit on the Pats. Clearly, it's got to be the Broncos because they're the other 4-0 team that's in there. And they're playing on the road at Dallas. And I'm wondering if this isn't really an opportunity for the Cowboys to make the statement that, you know, they are, you know, a player for the long haul, especially out of the NFC. And I know the Cowboys are only off to a 2-2 start. But tell me why I'm getting the feeling that I actually like the Cowboys in this game.
Well, 2-2 start makes you a juggernaut in the NFC East.
That's also true.
I mean, let's keep something in mind here. Denver has won four games this year.
Yep.
Correct?
Yes.
The NFC East has won four games this year.
Yes.
And
yes.
Two of them by Dallas.
Two of them are by Dallas, yes.
Yeah. So, and the AFC West is whooped up. But you know what? I'm on board with what you're saying. I totally get with what you're saying. And I don't disagree with you at all. And to me right now, what I've seen with the Cowboys is erratic on the road, but maybe just maybe finally becoming a pretty good home team, which they have not been since they moved into Jerry's playpen a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
They're distracted by all the other. You know, it's funny, last year, the Cowboys last season, weird stat, 4-4 at home, also 4-4 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
John, the Cowboys committed 29 turnovers last season, which is not an awful amount. Do you know that 20 of their 29 came in their own building?
At home. I always thought that the new Jerry world was a distraction, you know, with the big video screen and all that kind of. I've always thought that. I don't understand why people don't think that more often.
And I never understood what that roller coaster is doing in the middle of the field either. I mean, that just kind of throws me off every time I see it.
No, but Tony Romo's throws, right?
I was there for the Super Bowl between the Packers and the Steelers. It is a gaudy place, to say the least. Okay? But the only thing it's missing is a steel cage.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay?
It's true.
But beat the Giants, handled the Rams. By the way, coincidentally, DeMarco Murray with at least 20 carries in each of those games.
Yeah, and I think that's huge against the Broncos. I think you got to go right at them, control the ball as best you can, keep it out of Peyton's hands. I think the Cowboys are equipped to win this one.
I think they are, too. You know, this is, and I wanted to allude this, and obviously we're going to talk about New England next and so on. Very intriguing. We have 5-4-0 teams.
Yeah.
And all five of them are on the road this week.
I think that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. And all against teams that are either 2-2 or 3-1.
Right, which tells you that the teams that can survive, if we have any of them, are pretty doggone good.
Yes, exactly. So they're all going to get tested real quickly here. And I don't know how the schedule makers manage to do this stuff, but it's happening. There's no way. you could have ever forecasted 4-0 Kansas City, a 3-1 Tennessee, but there you have it.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, that brings us to Patriots-Bengals. And quite frankly, you know, there's a ton of good games here this week. I mean, there's some traditional games. There's Lions-Packers. There's Giants-Eagles, although that isn't as attractive as it has been in the past. Chargers-Raiders. I mean, the Texans-49ers. These are all probably pretty good games this week. So I think this week is chock full, really entertaining football, potentially entertaining football. And then Pats Bengals, both Eric and I, we're not too sure about the Patriots' shot in this one. I think it probably has more to do with we're just not sure what the Patriots are going to put out on the field on Sunday, more so than the Bengals are clearly a better home team than road team. So what are your thoughts going into this one?
Well, the thing I'm most curious about with New England is because this is a team that we're seeing that can control the ball, run it, effective passing, pretty respectable defense. At the very least, bend but don't break. You know, what are they, 16th in total defense, but 6th in points allowed?
Yeah.
I go back to the 2001 Patriots, 24th in yards allowed, 6th in scoring defense, won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is now suddenly a defense without a very pivotal piece.
Right.
And Vince Wilfork, and I'm going to be curious to see if the Bengals test him with an old friend in Ben Jarvis Green Ellis,
mm-hmm.
and a new friend in Giovanni Bernard.
Right.
And let's see what that 1-2 punch brings Cincinnati. They got to get better play from Andy Dalton. I know that sounds simple, but it's not happening. He has been erratic, inconsistent. You use whatever word you want to use with him. You know, this is a Bengal team that had the Bears on the ropes and let them get away. This is a Bengals team that beat Pittsburgh in week 2, which they rarely do at home. And Andy Dalton completed 25 out of 45 passes. But that means he had 20 incompletions as well.
Right, right, right.
And it wasn't particularly sharp against the Packers, but, you know, they still won the game. But you're right, they've been good at home. And they've yet to put together a complete effort. Now, I don't know if they put a complete effort this week. I'm going to have to lean toward them for being at home.
As we do, by the way.
It's a shaky lean.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, everybody last week didn't like the Patriots going to Atlanta, myself included. But they played the game they had to play to beat them and exposed Atlanta for a lot of its shortcomings. They could very easily do the same thing with Cincinnati this week. But you got to think, if Marvin Lewis's team is a contender, a signature win is like people like that. As if a signature win gets you more BCS points than a regular.
Right. Yeah. Or poll votes, one or the other, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not into signature wins. I'm kind of into like cursive wins. Okay. How about printing wins?
Printing wins. How about just win, baby? Let's use the Al Davis thing.
How about just a win?
Just a win.
Which the Bengals haven't done, against the Patriots the last 4 times they played them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of those games in Cincinnati. But I think if Marvin Lewis's team is headed where we think they're headed, which is back to the playoffs for an unprecedented third straight year, at least for them, these are the kind of games you get to hold serve at home.
Right.
I mean, listen, Pittsburgh is down, and the other 3 teams are 2-2.
Right.
That doesn't mean Pittsburgh is out. But if everybody else is going to play mediocre football,
you got to rise up.
Dallas in the NFC East.
Yep, you got to rise
up.
This
is a chance for Cincinnati to win a game that at least at home they should win.
Absolutely, I totally agree with that. It's their time to shine. They can actually seize a little bit of control of the division, even at 3-2, mm-hmm. with, as you suggested already, could be a statement win for them.
Exactly.
All right. Russell, as always, it's great to visit with you. You bring some insight that, frankly, you just can't get anywhere else. We can't get information this clever or this quickly if we Googled it.
Well, I'm going to see what I can do about that missing 18 and a half minutes. I might as well go back to the well and so on.
Hey,
listen, the beauty of doing a show with you for the last 13 years is doing it with somebody who enjoys this game as much as I do.
Absolutely.
Knows it's important, but not too serious. And you can have a fun conversation like this. And that's why I love doing your show.
Yeah, you're the best. And by the way, how many people do you think are going, what is this 18 and a half minutes thing they're talking about?
Listen, don't Google it, the 18 and a half minutes. Okay? See if you can still find a Blockbuster. Are they still around?
No.
They're not, are they?
What?
See if you can go on Redbox. Go on Redbox online and see if you can get the DVD of All the President's Men. It'll all be self-explanatory.
There you go. I like that
Great
one.
Great movie, by the way.
Yes, it is. A classic.
Great cast.
Totally, totally. Good stuff, Great Russell.
Cast. You got it.
Thanks, buddy.
Week, John.
Yes, sir, you will. Thanks. Russell Baxter. Again, profootballguru.com. You can hit him on Bleacher Report. You can see him as well on Yahoo Sports. He's Cold Hard Football Facts contributor as well. Guy knows more than you and I have ever forgotten about the NFL. All right, we've got 15 minutes left of the show here, and I got a jillion, I think, and probably just shy a couple of actually a jillion emails and some tweets and some Facebook posts to get to, so I'm going to get into as many of them as I can. Dave says, 27-24 Pats. Just wanted to say I just started listening to the show this season. It's great. Don't know why I didn't listen before. Well, David, the hell's your problem? I get through 4 hours of my work day listening to you and PFW, so keep up the great work. That's Dave in Lancaster, California. Jake says, Austin Colley. Really? Austin Colley? Seriously? Who's running the show down there? You lose your anchor on defense and you go out looking for another injury-prone receiver that no one else would touch? Didn't Bill already sign an injury-prone receiver in the offseason that's already hurt? Yet are we going back and forth on whether we should pay a guy that's healthy and a good player? Questionable character, but a good player. I can see it now. They'll offer him a lowball deal and spend the next 3 to 4 years looking for another guy to replace Tlaib. Jake, I share your pain here, bud. And also your questions. Zach in Medford, Mass. Says 27-17 Pats. Kevin in Munich. Guys, can't call in tonight. Still want to get my prediction out there. Okay, Kev. It's going to be a close game, relatively low score. I think we, as in the Patriots, will win 20-16. I also have a question. Really don't like the signing of Colley. Is there any significant injury to Dobson or Tompkins? I heard nothing about Tompkins. Also, I didn't get any information about Dobson's status. Well, we're waiting to hear when the injury report comes out. And maybe that'll shed a little more light on it. But, Kevin, I can't at this moment, which is about 15 minutes before 4 Eastern time on a Thursday. Can't help you out because we're just as much in a fog on it as you are. Sven says, it's all over our news about your government shutdown over here. Yeah, well, it's what Eric and I were talking about earlier. It doesn't surprise me. It should be. It is news. You know, you've got the allegedly the greatest country on the planet, you know, can't get out of its own way, you know, can't cut its way out of a paper bag, basically, when it comes to, you know, deciding government services and helping the actual populace. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's put that for sure. This is why these guys are in there, okay? You're there to serve us, and now you've got, you know, some of the arguments going forth. You're just like, okay, well, we're going to shut it all down. Yeah, that'll solve everything. Fraves in Denver. Fellas, I'm beginning to get concerned about the Patriots not putting Wilfork on IR. In my mind, there's no way we could be expecting him to come back late in the season or playoffs, is there? 31-year-old, 300-pounder rehabbing in that time frame? No way. What are we doing? Would there be significant cap room gained by cutting Wilfork? Would it give us more room to sign Tlaib? I'm in no way endorsing the move, but wouldn't put it past Belichick, see the Seymour trade, to drop a mainstay from our defense, especially considering that Wilfork may never be the same. Am I way off base to suggest the Patriots might be considering this? Jeez, Fraves, thanks for really just absolutely throwing a huge wet blanket over everything today. Honestly, I really hadn't thought that. I was wondering, why the heck haven't they put him on IR? That's what Eric and I were opining about in the opening hour of the show today. And frankly, wow, can't believe they do that, but I guess anything's possible. Greg, I wasn't going to make a pick this early in the show, but Eric just said low scoring. I'm going to pick Pats 35-21. Nice. Nice. Michael in Stockholm, Sweden. So we got two from Sweden today. I think this is going to be a close one. Cincinnati will probably try to run the ball a lot with Wilfork out. I think they'll have some success, burn a lot of clock doing it. So with that in mind, I think it'll be a low-scoring game. Our defense has a big stop in the end. Patriots 14, Bengals 13. That's a good pick. Dan in Virginia. Colley signing. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot? My sentiments exactly. Okay, just, you know, for the, I know that's going to fly over everybody's head, so just type it out, and then, you know, use capital letters in front of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And then you'll probably get why I'm laughing. You're right. It seems odd. Was this just one of the due diligence practices the Patriots often run? I would have thought Laurent Robinson would have been a better option. Hopefully, Collie's just like my like a life preserver on an airplane. Ultimately, of no use, but when it does hit the fan, just in case there is, make everyone feel just a little more reassured. That's outstanding. I like that. Austin Collie's like the life preserver on an airplane. Oh, Dan, you made me laugh, buddy. You made me laugh. I like that. He says he sees a 27-17 Patriots win. Nick in Victoria, B.C. John, I think the Pats suffered their first loss due to the injury bug and the odd signing of Collie. Something's up behind the scenes. Leads to Pats 20, Cincinnati 27. Hope I'm wrong. I hope it's Atlanta all over again. Robin in Alaska, I can respect Eric's point of view. There's nobility there. However, these are men that are educated and informed on the risks, so much so waivers are now involved in terms of Eric's, you know, being worried about players putting themselves out there to subject to injury after having already been injured greatly in the past, which we talked about in hour one. At this point, where all the issues are spoken about, I cannot fret over a man doing what he feels he needs to do. Stallone wrote The Last Rocky about this very issue in sports, felt it was handled well in that film. There comes a point where it's on these men. As long as the sport in question has provided reasonable precautions and education on the risks, which is, of course, why the NFL and the retired players avoided the suit and decided to go, you know, for big bucks here, because the NFL knows it's on the hook here. Accountability is the life they have chosen. Jeff in Alberta, going with the Patriots to win 23-13. Guessing Gronk still won't be back, that Gostkowski will have to hit some field goals. Bengals just aren't ready to be winning games like this. Dalton will struggle to move the ball. You know, honestly, Jeff, that is about where I wanted to go with this game, about 23-13 Patriots. Then when they lost Wilfork, I'm thinking, that hurt. I mean, before we knew Wilfork was out, when the Patriots in the aftermath, we still weren't sure until the Boston Globe originally reported that he might have an Achilles tear, which is what happened. But after the in the aftermath of that win over Atlanta, I'm thinking this turns it all around for me. I'm thinking the Patriots are going to beat Cincinnati. And then I learn a little bit more this week about Wilfork and thinking of Cincinnati and looking at them a little more closely. And then, you know, we might be a little bit more banged up receiver-wise than people are letting on here, hence the signing of Austin Collie today. And I'm thinking, I don't know. But, Jeff, that's where I was going until I had a little more chance to think about it. From Thomas, John, you don't think there's any chance Vince comes back this season? You know, Thomas, I guess maybe it's not a complete tear. I guess anything's possible. I mean, to me, that would be nothing short of amazing. And it would certainly explain why they haven't IR'd him and put him out for the year. Because they think there's a reasonable chance he could come back before the year is over. That blows me away. But it also speaks to the issue which Eric and I were griping about in the opening hour of the program today as well. And that is, nobody's forthcoming with information. He's out for now. How is this going to help Cincinnati if we know that, well, we're not putting him on the IR because we think there's a chance he could come back? How's that going to help Cincinnati? It's not going to help anybody. It's just stupidity is what it is. I don't know. Sven from Sweden. Of course, they don't bring in a wide receiver as a run blocker when they can use a tight end, but do you think they brought Collie in because he is a good run blocker? Nope, not at all. What else? Gabe says from Chicago, love the show, John. Think the Patriots are just taking a flyer on Collie. I certainly do not believe they are in panic mode, although Dobson did have a pretty bad injury. We don't really know. It looked bad. It might not be as bad as it looked. He says, I expect Tompkins to be fine. I expect Amendola to be back this week. And he says, Pats win 27-13. Okay. Excellent. Now let's go to the online media here. Twitter. What do we have on Twitter today? Michael, my bet for the week, Patriots 24, Bengals 21. Going to be close with last-minute scoring drive by Brady and a touchdown by Edelman. Nick says, out here in New Mexico, prediction on Pats game, Brady has 3 touchdowns, Cincinnati struggles in the fourth, Pats win 27-20. All right. Mark says, good to be 4-0. Knew they would beat the Falcons. This week, injuries make it scary. Still think the Pats win 20-16. Jeff on Twitter, Pats win 28-17. D gets a TD this week. Excellent. You want to follow us on Twitter? You want to tweet in your scores as well? If you like Twitter, follow me at JR Broadcaster. That's how you find me on Twitter. All right, we're going to wrap it up here then with some Facebook posts as well. Big Matt says on the Freeman front, is there any reason for Jacksonville to not pick up Freeman? They have a terrible QB problem. And on the front of this weekend's game, I'm going to go with Patriots, 24-21. Field goal in the final minute or so. Chandler Jones gets back on the horse, 2 sacks. Amendola does play, but only in a limited fashion. No Gronk again, but the defense gets it done. Chris, John, pick Thursday again. This time I'm going to go with the Patriots laying a smackdown on the Bengals. He says 30-13. What should we think with the new wide receiver signing? Is Gronk going to play on Sunday? And the same with, I hope, Amendola? Yesterday you were discussing the general overview of the win-loss column. I think with how things are now, there is probably only two teams that I think will be losses, Saints and the Broncos, and that these two will be in the Super Bowl. Thanks, John. So there you go. He says, just noticed that Josh Freeman has been released. Is he a better option than Ryan Mallett as a backup? Oh, goodness, no. No. Mm-mm. Not going that direction. Not at all. Mary Beth, prediction. She says, Pats 17, Bengals 14. 17-14. That works. Michael says, let's see if I can get back here. Prediction for the Bengals game, Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, and the law firm will have some initial success, but the New England defense will settle down, and after some key turnovers by the Bengals, Marvin Lewis and company be held to field goals. Okay, he says 27-20 Patriots. How much is the Austin Collie signing an information gathering project? Don't take too much stock in the injury report. New England puts plenty of players on it, and they comply, quote-unquote, with the rules. Remember, everything you say can be used, so the powers in the team don't want to give you much to use. That's probably as plausible reason as any that we're getting, Michael, about the information or lack thereof. Tim says, I don't see this week as the big test for a Vinceless team since he doesn't impress me offensively. AJ is talented, but Dalton is mediocre. I can see our D getting a score against them. We've had a week to prepare for life without Will Fort. Benny has looked incredibly slow for them. He says 24-10 Pats. All right. Michelle says, is it just me, or is the Atlanta win worth all or all the injuries and bad hits that we took? Do you think they may have held back Gronk, maybe due to the type of game and officiating crew, and did not want to risk Gronk on it? Because I think the team is just as skittish about putting Gronk back in as Gronk is, maybe. I think Gronk may be just as important to the locker room as a court jester type as the leadership role players. Kind of like Matt Lye was, except I think the jokes Matt did were all intentional. I think this team really needed a class clown type after the past rough game. And as for prediction, 21-17, Pats. All right, that's good. Excellent. What else do we have? Oh, a couple of others here on Facebook before we get off to Football Nation. Sean says, John, my prediction for this week, 30-10. I think the Bengals are too inconsistent, similar to what they did in the game against Green Bay. I think they'll turn the ball over a few times to help ensure a Patriots win. And he says, also, I agree with you on the government shutdown. Fire them all. JQ says, John, my prediction is 27-13, Pats. Nori says, I expected the Pats to win one of the games against the Falcons, Bengals, or Saints. To go 4-2 after week 6. Patriots already got one. I was very impressed with the win against the Falcons. I don't want to be too high on the Pats just yet. I need to see them play consistently well against quality opponents. Bengals front 7 concerns me. He says, I expect the Bengals to go out playing their best. I think the Pats offense puts up only 17-21. Therefore, Pats lose a close, hard-fought game, 21-20 Bengals. Hope I'm wrong. That's my prediction. You're kind of there right with me, Nori. I predicted earlier 17-16 Bengals. Patrick, John, I know it's not quite yet week 6, but just curious on your thoughts about playing the Saints' high-powered offense. Do you think we have Gronk and Amendola back for that game? If so, does that reduce Edelman's play, and what does Austin Collie have to offer? I'm going to answer that next week, Patrick. But I will say that, yeah, I think Gronk and Amendola are both back next week. Paul says, Pats 24, Bengals 13. Comfortable win for the Pats, with the Wookiees continuing to improve game by game. And the D standing tall once again. Talib makes it five picks in five games and returns one to the house. Ooh. I have some really good predictions here. You guys are stepping out. Absolutely. Stepping out. That's good stuff. All right. Again, I said 17-16 overall. I'm thinking that, you know, it's a game that's going to go either way. I'm thinking that, yeah, turnover could certainly decide it. I'm thinking, though, the Patriots are just going to have a little tougher time moving the football because of all the uncertainty that we have at wide receiver. And you know what? I'm also thinking, and I'll leave you with this, I'm also thinking that the Patriots may be playing us all for fools here. And that the injury report, which just came out and has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 players listed on it. 16 of those limited participation, and 2 did not participate. Stephen Ridley, Matthew Slater. I think they're playing us all for fools. There is no Wilfork on the list is out either.
Which probably means he's going to IR.
Yes, that would tell me that they actually might make that move. 16 limited participation. Now, if that isn't a tweak of the nose at the NFL, I don't know what is. We'll find out if they're playing us all for fools. Football Nation's next. St. Pat's time, St. Pat's channel next Tuesday. We'll pick the nits out of the Bengals game. Get you ready for the Saints here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.